Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And this was brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game. They have a brand new fantasy competition focused on the Champions League. You can play that at www.fantasy-champions.league.com. You can set up your Champions League team. So today, we are going to be joined at the end of the podcast by my great friend Paolo Mangone from Di Marzio site. We're going to talk about Azzurri, the mid-table, the race to avoid relegation, and he's going to rant on Juve at the end. We have our friend Thousand Names is back with his game predictions. Juve fans, I think for once you'll be pretty happy with what Thousand picked. We have your Twitter questions to get to, but before we address all that, I'm joined by our great friend, the co-host, the producer of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, the first international break is particularly dreadful. I feel like we get a little tease of the league, and then it's the rug's kind of taken from under our feet, but Serie A is back this weekend. So there are two matches that stood out to me. So I wanted to ask you which ones you're more looking forward to. We have Napoli playing at home against Fiorentina, who have won their first two matches. Their first one had to be rescheduled because of the tragedy in Genova. And then we have Sassuolo, who are shockingly in second place, traveling to Allianz Arena in Turin to face Juventus. So let me ask you, out of those two matches, which ones intrigues you more?
All right, so my answer, David, is pretty decisive. But before I completely dismiss Juve and Sassuolo, I'm not saying it's going to be a nothing game. I'm not even saying it's not going to be an entertaining game. However, I do think Juventus will play even better than they have to start the season. I think Ronaldo will end his goal drought, and I put that in quotations. And then on the flip, Sassuolo, who's been very good, I do think they'll come back down to earth a little bit. I think Juventus will have this comfortably, especially since it is at Juventus Stadium. I think Juventus will be just fine. Sassuolo fans after the game should not at all be disheartened. However, I don't necessarily think this is going to set up as some may think, thinking, oh, Sassuolo's off to a great start. Juve's been not great. They've gotten all their points, but they haven't been typical Juve. Maybe Sassuolo can upset them here. Nah, I think Juve will be just fine. The Napoli-Fiorentina matchup intrigues me a whole lot more. As you said, Fiorentina's only played two games, not three, yet they have been fantastic in both their two games, winning their first game 6-1. Granted, it was Chievo, but still 6-1, and then their next game 1-0 to Udinese, getting a clean sheet. I really like the way Fiorentina are looking. I like the way they possibly can look for the whole entire season. Some very promising players on their team, especially up front. And then Napoli started the season off great, two wins, and then they got absolutely punched in the face by Sampdoria. But we've talked about it. In my opinion, I think that was more about Sampdoria playing really well than Napoli playing really poorly. I just think this Napoli-Fiorentina match really sets up to be a very, very entertaining match. I couldn't tell you who's going to win, to be honest. I still think Napoli's the better team. However, they're coming off a loss, and Fiorentina's not experienced one yet. I think for a neutral party, if you do not have a dog in the fight at all, this is maybe the best matchup of the weekend, Napoli-Fiorentina. I'm really excited for it. So that's a much more intriguing matchup in my eyes, David. That's my answer. What about you?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think Fiorentina, we really need to see them tested in a match against a strong opponent. Sassuolo did well against Inter in the first match. I'm a big fan of their manager, De Zerbi. I'm very curious to see how he does, but I'm with you. You know, I could see them coming back down to earth in the match against Juve, but there still are some pretty intriguing storylines in that match. For one, it looks like Berardi is actually going to play against Juve. It was kind of like a Di Natale situation against Napoli, where there was always an injury or a suspension or something that come up where he would never play against them. Of course, Berardi has a long history with Juve, was linked with them forever in the age of co-ownerships. They co-owned it, but it never materialize, then look, I really like De Zerbi. I like what he's done with Boateng, who's been very impressive so far. It looks that my challenge that Locatelli would play less than 19 matches isn't looking too good, because it looks like he'll start again. So let's see how he does there. And we also have defender Magnani, who Juve owns, that's going to play for Sassuolo, that came off a very impressive season at Perugia. And he's done pretty well in Serie A so far. So let's see how he's tested there. But Napoli-Fiorentina is actually a very juicy match, because we've seen Napoli, you know, they came back twice after falling behind in the matches that they won. They weren't able to do so against Sampdoria. They should do well at home. They're usually pretty strong there. But Fiorentina's been a pretty intriguing team for them. Also, Napoli hasn't been shy about trying to get Chiesa off Fiorentina. So it's going to be an intriguing match for him. I think Chiesa is one of the few players that leaves these matches from with the Azzurri feeling pretty good about himself. So that should be a fantastic match. I'm just really excited that Serie A is back. And although there's not huge matches with top teams going against each other, we still have some pretty intriguing ones as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, David, what I really like about this show is we have our staple segments that we do every episode, but then we also will put in segments depending on the time, the relevance into the football world. So we are in the international break. We're technically out of it, but let's talk a little bit about salaries in Serie A, maybe something that is a little bit under-talked about. We just talk about performance and production, but there's always more to it. So, David, we're going to ask three questions here in this segment, salaries in Serie A. The first question is, which teams are likely to get the most out of their payroll?
So I feel like it's a tradition of the first international break, Gazzetta dello Sport, the iconic sports newspaper in Italy with the pink paper, you know, as someone that, you know, grew up well before the internet age and was lucky enough to travel abroad. I grew up in Italy, but traveled abroad a lot as a young kid. Before there was Twitter, I used to get a lot of my news from a 2-3-day-old Gazzetta dello Sport. So when they post all the salaries in Serie A right around this time of year, I always get excited. It brings me back to my youth. So they reveal all the salaries in Serie A. They talk about which player earned how much. They also rank the teams in order of payroll. So I have to say Napoli still find themselves with only the fifth highest payroll in Serie A. And this is a team that's coming off 91 points. We've talked about it ad nauseum, record-breaking point for a team that did win the title. I think last year they had the sixth highest salary in Serie A. This year they come in with the fifth highest. And if I were to tell you that Napoli is only the fifth highest salary in Serie A, before, without knowing what happened in the summer, you might assume that a lot of their players left. And the only really significant player that left was Jorginho. They lost Peperina as well, but Jorginho was the big one. But they also added Fabian Ruiz, Verdi, Mere, and they spent a lot on him, but not a high salary. So I think, look, you know, we can make fun of President De Laurentiis. His quotes tend to be pretty outrageous. But as far as how the club is run, they do a great job. So I think talent-wise, they're either the second or third team in Serie A, and they come in with the fifth highest payroll. The other one, not surprisingly, another club that we talk a lot about on the podcast is Lazio, their ability to run their team without spending a lot. Their payroll is only $66 million. To give you a frame of reference, Napoli's around $95 million. We have the two clubs in Milan over $100 million. I would say there's a huge drop-off in talent between Lazio and Milan. Heck, I could almost argue that Lazio has just as good the amount of talent as them. Their payroll is about 50% less than what Roma's, their crosstown rivals, are. Actually, their payroll is closer to Torino's than Inter's. But if you look at their talent, although they lost De Vrij, they still have a really good team. So those are the two ones that really stand out to me. They get great bang for their buck at the top. Atalanta as well. If you look, their payroll is actually lower than Bologna's. And when I look at Bologna, that's one team that's really deprived of talent. Atalanta just has a great formula. A lot of young players They have Papu Gomez that they're not paying a huge amount to. So I would say those are the three teams, Napoli, Lazio, and Atalanta.
Okay. All right. The next part of this we're going to ask is, David, who are some of Serie A's most underpaid players?
So I mentioned Papu Gomez earlier. He earns about 1.7 million, really low. Another one that I think does really well is Kolarov for Roma. He's at 2 million. And very important, every time I'm quoting these salaries in Italy, they're reported net of taxes, so after taxes. In almost all other leagues, especially the Premier League, they're reported before taxes. So when I say that Kolarov earns 2 million a season, taxes are about 50%. If you were to kind of compare it to Premier League, that would be 4 million a season. So last season, Kolarov was probably the best left back in Serie A, especially once Goulam went down. So for 2 million, especially for a player that's a veteran towards the end of his career, that's a very good bargain there. Also, Chievo is getting away with paying Birsa and Giaccherini less than half that Juve pays their third string right back in Deciglio and their fourth string center back in Rugani. So that's really impressive. I'm a big fan of Birsa, and I think Giaccherini too brings great value. With younger players, you know, I always caution people when we talk about salaries of young players. If you're under 24 or so, the salaries tend to be pretty low, but there are some players, you know, that are on the lower end. So Chiesa and Belotti are at 1.7 and 1.8 million respectively. We have Sampdoria midfielder Praet, who I really like, at 1.4 million. And I think the best bargain in the whole league, it might be Atalanta midfielder Freuler. We've had multiple guests rate him as one of the most underrated players in Serie A, and he only earns half a million, and he has a long-term contract. I have a feeling his agent's going to try to fix that, but right now I would say he's the best bargain.
Okay, David, the logical next question of this segment would be, who are some of Serie A's most overpaid players?
So I'm going to pick on Inter, who I think have the second highest payroll in Serie A. They are paying over 6.5 million combined for Ranocchia, João Mário, and Borja Valero, who essentially really aren't part of Spalletti's plan. If at any point any of them start, it means that either there was an injury or a huge drop-off in form. So those are the ones that stand out to me. In general, I don't want to pick on the players, but Milan's paying a ton for their goalkeepers. They're paying 10 million net of taxes for the trio of the Donnarumma brothers and Pepe Reina. Pepe Reina is being paid as a starter. He's actually one of the highest paid goalkeepers in Serie A, but he's a backup. I think logically, when Reina agreed to sign with Milan last March, I think almost everyone, including himself and his agent, assumed that Donnarumma was going to be sold. The market never materialized, so Milan was stuck paying for all these players. And the last one that I'm going to put in the overpaid category is Barzagli, who still earns $3 million a year. The reason I'm going to put him in this category is we've seen Juve not being shy with getting rid of older players that earned a lot of money. We've seen they didn't want to extend Buffon's contract. Del Piero was shown the door. Even Marchisio, they rescinded his contract. And Barzagli at $3 million a year earns more than Manolas and is not that far off from Koulibaly, who's at $3.5 million, who I think is the best defender in Serie A. So as much as I like Barzagli, he's had a great career, I would say you can make a great case he's the most overpaid player in Serie A at $3 million a season.
Oh, Andrea. All right, David, let's move on to our next segment. And I think we're both pretty happy that we're doing this next segment because it truly means we have some Serie A football ahead. Let's move to our game picks with you and Thousand Names. So what do we have this week from you and Thousand?
Oh, boy. So Thousand Names came out guns blazing. He got me his picks a little bit in late because I think he was busy crafting his tweet comparing football clubs to tennis players that I retweeted and I got some pretty hilarious replies to. So Fausen was very busy with that, but he did send me in his game picks for the weekend. I teased it at the top. I think Juve fans, for the most part, are going to be pretty happy with his picks here. So let's start. The first one, Juve Sassuolo, 1,000 names, has Juve winning 5-0 with a brace by Douglas Costa, Dybala, Mandzukic, and Bonucci scoring. So maybe my math's not great. Actually, yeah, that might be 6 goals. But in any event, his comment is that everyone scores except for Ronaldo. For people that have been following our podcast, 1,000 names on the camp that Ronaldo's going to end up being a big bust. He also says that De Zerbi proves to be the master of the fixed matches where he gets help, and that Marotta, Juve's executive director, is so in charge of Sassuolo that he tells him to kind of get out of the way so Juve wins. So that's his prediction, Juve Sassuolo 5-0. For those of you in Italy that are tuning in for his picks, I'll read it in Italian. Juve Sassuolo 5-0, Douglas Costa, Dybala, Mandzukic, Bonucci, doppietta per Douglas Costa, segnano tutti tranne Ronaldo. De Zerbi si conferma il re delle partite truccate, Marotta comanda Sassuolo, si scansa, fidatevi. I'm going to agree that Juve is going to win. I'm not going to have it quite 5-0. I'm going to give it 3-1 for Juve. I'll have Dybala getting on the score sheet, and I'm going to give Ronaldo 2 goals. I think it's time for him to get on the score sheet in Serie A. Next one, Napoli-Fiorentina, the big match of the weekend. 1,000 names has Napoli winning 2-1. Callejon, Mertens, and Chiesa. Ancelotti doesn't know at all what's going on. Napoli is very poor on defense, but that Pioli is going to once again get out of the way to help a big team. In Italian, Napoli-Fiorentina 2-1. Callejon, Mertens, Chiesa. Ancelotti non ci sta capendo niente, Napoli fa ridere in difesa, Pioli solita scartina, fidatevi. I'm going to agree with him, and I try to have different picks than him, but I do think Napoli is going to win. I think it's actually going to be 2-0, and I'm going to give a goal to Milik, and I'll give a goal to Mertens as well. So last match picked by 1,000 names, Torino traveling to Friuli to visit Udinese. He has it as 1-1, Lasagna Belotti. Mazzarri is someone that never loses, and that Torino always does well against playing against teams in black and white when Mazzarri is the coach. Here we're going to disagree. I'm going to have Udinese winning 2-1. I've heard a lot of great things about Udinese. They didn't impress me too much against Fiorentina, but I'm going to go on blind faith that at home they'll do pretty well. So I'll have it 2-1 for Udinese against Torino. I'll give Lasagna and De Paul a goal, and I'll agree on Belotti. So in Italian, I forgot to read it. Udinese Torino 1-1, Lasagna Belotti. Mazzarri, l'uomo che non perde mai, il suo toro contro le squadre bianconere si esalta. So as always, thank you, 1,000 names, for your picks. If you missed the tweet on his comparison between football and tennis, there were some really good ones there. I don't really follow tennis that much, Alex, but he compared Chelsea to Del Potro, whoever that is. So now let's get to one thing that I always know is very good, and those are the questions from our Twitter listeners. You can send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. As always, we love getting questions on Serie A. Transfer season's over, but if you have some early questions on transfers, send them in. We also love getting questions on transfers, on journalism, music, TV, film. We've been getting some really good questions on podcasting as well, so feel free to send them in. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, how about this to start? Does the Italian national team miss players from the run they had in the 2016 Euros under my boy Conte?
It's a good question. I tweeted this. I think that we're going to look back in like a year or two, if we aren't already, at the job Conte did with that Euro as really one of the great coaching jobs of the past 10 years. I mean, you look at the Azzurri without Conte, what a train wreck it's been. We'll get into it in the interview with Paolo Mangone. So it's really not so much the players. I mean, do I think the Italian national team would benefit from having Giaccherini and Graziano Pelé on the team? Probably not. I think those players work with Conte. I think he's, players that are functional to his system and that he knows will give their all. So more than the players, I think it's more a matter of Conte. And I think Mancini would make a big mistake to try to copy that style. I think that works with a manager like Conte. I just think Mancini has very different attributes.
All right, this is an interesting next question, David. At what point do the Azzurris damage good players like Simone Zaza, Lorenzo Insigne, Bonaventura, Belotti, and Berardi stop making the team so youngsters can just play?
Well, I'm glad I wasn't the one to put Bonaventura in this category because I get a lot of crap over him. And I actually think Bonaventura deserves to be on the Azzurri. Probably that says more about the rest of the talent. So I know you and I had talked about it, Alex, earlier this week on Insigne, how I see him as definitely a blue chip player for Napoli, without a doubt. He's just never really excited me on the Azzurri. But I think, you know, you look at the drop off in talent, like they need to find a way to get Insigne going. I don't think they can afford to have him off the squad. I'm on the camp that I'm not giving up on Belotti. I think a lot of people are overreacting to one bad season where he struggled because of injuries. You know, is he going to turn into the next Gianluca Vialli, a player he has a lot of characteristics in common? Probably not, but I still think he can be a pretty functional player. So I would still go with those two. Berardi, I'm just not sure he has the temperament to succeed at this level. Zaza, I have to say Immobile is so bad on the Azzurri that in that match against Portugal, I was like, geez, if I had to keep one of these two, it would be Zaza. I wouldn't write him off completely for the Azzurri. But again, this goes back to the lack of talent that Mancini has. So for the most part, I'm going to answer that I think these players can still give more to Italy, but this says way more about the rest of the talent than it does about them.
Yeah, and I totally get the question, and I understand once again that Lorenzo Insigne has been very poor for Italy, but I cringe seeing Simone Zaza and Lorenzo Insigne right next to each other. I just do think they are different breeds, different tiers. So, David, next Twitter question. What are the odds Milan can convince Gazzidis to leave Arsenal so he can join their management team?
So today, my friend Fabrizio Romano had an article on The Guardian on it. Milan's pretty optimistic that they can make this happen. Gazzidis, who's at Arsenal, has been doing a very good job there. He's been linked to them for quite some time. I mean, Milan's slowly but surely starting to get a dream team management-wise. And, you know, they, of course, have Leonardo and Maldini. They're going to, you know, I think Gazzidis could fit really well into this. They're also about to bring back Gandini, who used to work for them, who's at Roma. And that's a really impressive management team. So Milan at the time, Fabrizio Romano reported, feel pretty confident that they can convince him to come to the club. They really see Gazzidis as someone that can help them deal with UEFA to get a voluntary agreement now that they have new ownership. So it'll be intriguing. Arsenal doesn't want to lose him, but if I had to bet at this time, I would give it like 70% that Gazzidis is going to join Milan.
Okay. All right, David, how about this? Do you think Morata potentially leading the Italian Federation would help Calcio's growth?
Look, I got all the conspiracy theories on, you know, Juve's executive director going to the Italian Federation, how that'll help even more Juve if you're into the whole conspiracy theory thing. But let's be honest, Marotta's as competent a director as there is in Italy right now. Paratici, Juve sporting directors, handles more, picking the players or whatnot. Marotta's more the administrator. He's more the math guy. He's done a great job with Juve's books, building their revenues. I can't think of a better person to lead the Italian Federation. I think he really has a vision, has a plan. I think this would be great for Calcio. I know there's some people that say, oh, now the Italian Federation will favor Juve even more. Whatever. I think they need competent people running the Federation. And you can hate Juve all you want, but it's hard to argue against the work that Marotta's done.
All right, David, fair enough. How about our last Twitter question? This is a hot, hot topic on Twitter. What did you make of Sami Khedira's extension with Juventus?
So I have a lot of thoughts. So the first one is I'm seeing a lot of people tweeting that Juve extending Kedira's contract is a disrespect towards Marchisio. I literally see zero connection between the two things, apart from the fact that they're both midfielders. Kedira, you know, shockingly, he's been pretty healthy recently, and he's someone that can start a lot of games. Marchisio just couldn't. I think he had 12 starts in all competitions last season. Don't quote me on that, but it was around that. It was painfully obvious that as great as Marchisio was as a player, he just hasn't been the same since the injury. So you can argue on if Kedira is good or not, but he has been able to get on the pitch. So I really don't see any connection between the two. We've talked about Marchisio and how this is kind of part of the Ronaldo deal. Juve has to clear gross wages. They couldn't pay like a third, fourth string midfielder $8 million before taxes a season before, you know, like they were with Marchisio. So to me, there's really no connection there. The other thing to me, the Kedira extension shows a lot how Allegri is starting to have a lot of power at Juve. I think they really are trying to set it up so that Allegri will be Juve's version of Ferguson, like a manager that's really a lot in charge of the club long term. You know, they sided with him when Bonucci left. Bonucci could only come back if he made up with Allegri. Kedira is one of Allegri's, you know, big guys, as well as Mandzukic. So don't be surprised if Mandzukic gets an extension next. So to me, that really speaks to how much influence Allegri has at Juve. We talk a lot about how at Juve the players will run supreme. Now, I could argue that maybe Allegri's will is what runs supreme more. And look, I get it. Kedira, if you look at like stats on who scored or right, whatnot, he looks terrible. I think too, the eye test on TV isn't great. I haven't seen Kedira a ton in person, but I have to say the few times that I have seen him in person, he's much more impressive when you watch him in a game. His positioning, he's just a really intelligent player. And like Allegri pointed out in the press conference before Parma, like, look, there's a reason that Kedira has started at Real Madrid. He started for the German national team, and he's starting with Juve. These are as high-end as it gets on both club and national team level, and you have managers who keep picking him. It was very interesting. This was Allegri, who I have to say gives really great press conferences because he doesn't talk in cliches. He just speaks his mind. He says that when it comes to Kedira, he feels that a lot of the people that criticize him are people that just see the match. Maybe they're not really following, they're on their cell phones, but people that actually watch the match with attention appreciate Kedira more. The final aspect, and I know here I'm sounding like someone that's completely defending the move, and I guess for the most part I am, in big games Kedira's done really well. You can count on him in the Champions League. Before Cristiano Ronaldo came, the only two players on the squad at Juve that had won a Champions League were Kedira and Mandzukic. So if you're a Juve fan that really wants that trophy with the big Mickey Mouse ears, I think Kedira is one of the players that can make that happen. So that's my take on that. I have a feeling many would disagree with that, but that's how I feel. So I also want to take this moment to thank everyone that sent in Twitter questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. You guys are co-writers of the show with me with that. We also count on you being our marketing department. I love seeing people tagging our posts with the links to the podcast, promoting it. We really appreciate that. Also, if you're listening to us on your iPhone, please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 5 seconds. Go to iTunes, search for CalcioLand. Scroll down, leave us a 5-star review. You wouldn't believe how much that helps, and it will only take you a couple of seconds. So we're going to close the week with an interview with my colleague Paolo Mangone from Di Marzio site. I think you'll really enjoy it, and thanks everyone for your support. So for the interview part of the podcast, I am thrilled to be joined by one of my favorite colleagues on Di Marzio's English page, my friend Paolo Mangone. You guys know him as kind of the king of the mid-table. He's one of our go-to people when we kind of want to move away from the top teams. He also has a huge passion for the Azzurri, so there really was no better time to have Paolo back on. So, Paolo, I'm thrilled to welcome you back to CalcioLand. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks, David. Just came back from Italy a couple weeks ago. Well, still adapting to America.
All right, buddy. So perfect timing. So let's start with the Azzurri. So although you are a bit younger than me, you have a passion for the Azzurri. You have an appreciation for the history. I've mentioned this before. When we met in person in Boston to go see Juve Roma at Gillette Stadium, you told me, look for the vintage Paolo Rossi jersey. So I can't think of a better person to ask this question. So Alex and I have been talking a lot about it on the podcast, about the Azzurri. I feel like Ventura, as bad as he was, and he deserved all the criticism that he received, that kind of, you know, two things can be true at the same time. He did a terrible job, but maybe he didn't have, great talent at his disposal. So that's my take. So I want to ask you, kind of, how do you feel about the talent available to Mancini at this time, especially considering the Azzurri's history in the past 20, 30 years?
So in my opinion, it's one of the worst talent pools in recent memory. I can't remember a time where the Italian national team has been in such dire straits. Mancini should have said that Italian clubs aren't playing enough with young players. And there has been some criticism, some blowback to that comment. And the fact that when he was coach of Inter, he was contributing to that problem. So the thing is that they need to start developing young talent. And I guess Mancini realizes he made mistakes and started calling up young players. So I give credit to where credit's due at this point.
Yep. So let's talk, though. Let's try to stay on the solution rather than the problem. What do you think Mancini should do moving forward? And are there some players that you'd like him to see play no matter what moving forward?
The only player that I'd love to see to play no matter what is Federico Chiesa. That's the only fixture that should be in the starting 11 for Italy. In other cases, they should go on a case-by-case basis. For example, Marco Benassi played all three games, or two games at least, and scored three goals, and he didn't even see 1 minute of playing time. It's the same thing with Niccolo Barella. He was called up too. He started all three games, scored a nice goal to win to help his club win against Atalanta, and he didn't see any start time. So he chose players who were on the fringes for their club instead of playing players who are in form, have minutes under their belt, and it showed. It showed in the quality of the gameplay. They were slow, they were labored, they struggled in terms of passing. So it's disappointing when coaches say yes, let's get some young players in there, but it's disappointing when the fact that they don't play. And that's what's bothering me.
Yep. So let me ask you another topic on the Azzurri. So ever since winning the World Cup back in 2006, and it's been a long time now already, we had the disaster in South Africa in 2010. They didn't get out of the group on Lippi's return. We had 2014, not much better, basically the same result. They didn't get out of the group. And in the last World Cup, they didn't qualify at all. In the middle of that, you know, we had some pretty good Euros under Prandelli, but I'd say especially the one under Conte could really be looked as an aberration, at least in my opinion. So tell me a little bit about what you think about that. And do you think maybe Mancini can copy some of the things Conte did to get that impressive run in the Euro?
Well, first off, we should use Holland as a warning sign. In that case, they haven't qualified for two straight major tournaments, and Italy is at risk for falling under the same category. But in terms of Conte, no one can replicate Conte. No one can be so enthusiastic and charismatic. But the thing is that Mancini has to mold the team into his own image, and he tried to do that. There was reports that he released the music playlist, and it was all in English. And this was a tactic that he used in England during his Premier League winning campaign. So these are our warming signs, our encouraging signs, and I hope he continues along that way.
Okay, so now let's shift back to Serie A. So you wrote an article on the Marzio site that I really enjoyed. You finally went to San Siro to watch a match, and you caught a really good one between Milan and Roma. You told me you had never really been north of Florence. You go to Italy often. So tell me a little bit about, A, what it was like to finally make it to San Siro, and what stood out at you about that match.
It was a surreal feeling being outside of the stadium after watching games being played at that stadium for so long in my life. When I saw those towers, it kind of gave me goosebumps that I was actually there. And it only became real when I saw the ultras break into the stadium. What I thoroughly liked about the match was how different it is from other stadiums around the country, where the fans feel closer to each other. There's a lot more buzz in the stadium, and what I enjoyed about it was that I can tell that even before Cutrone scored, was that Milan fans truly have an affinity for their youth player. It was something special to watch.
Okay, so let's before we get to your wheelhouse, the mid-table, the battle to avoid relegation, I have to ask you, the season has just started. We always like to get from our guests kind of how they stand towards the top of the table. So without overreacting too much to the first few matches, who are your top four teams in Serie A right now?
Right now I got Juventus, Inter, Napoli, and Milan. Milan was the question mark, but after watching the game live against another Champions League rival, they know how to grind out results. I think they learned their lessons from the game against Napoli, and it showed on the pitch against Roma.
All right, Paolo. Now let's get to your wheelhouse. Let's start with two teams that are off to a very surprising start in Serie A. This is Sassuolo, who are going into Juventus Stadium as the second team in the standing, and Spal, who surprised everyone by getting 6 points in their first two matches. So I'm assuming you're not going that Sassuolo can stay in the Champions League spot and Spal in the Europa League spot, but realistically, what do you think their ceiling is?
So Spal will definitely survive the season. They could probably even challenge for mid-table. And same goes for Sassuolo. Survival is, I think, is a certainty. And mid-table is probably where they'll finish. But if they can pull off a result as they did against Inter Sassuolo in Juventus Stadium, then I hope that there's some sort of fairy tale story that surrounds them. Italy needs another Leicester-style miracle, because we haven't seen one for the past 25 to 30 years. So it'd be nice to see one.
Okay, so now let's talk about some teams that are struggling right now. Chievo and Bologna. So let me ask you, of these two, which one should be more worried moving forward?
I think Chievo should be the most worried moving forward. There are reports today that the Italian Federation prosecutor is looking for a 15 points deduction. So if they get any type of deduction, I think that sends them down to Serie B. As for Bologna, I think Inzaghi needs more time. They showed some progress in the first half against Inter, but the thing is that Inter was too strong and won those 3 points more than Bologna did.
Okay, so now let's talk about the newly promoted teams. I'm not as up to date as you are on them, but they seem like a strong class to me. Empoli have always been pretty feisty in Serie A. They gave Sarri, manager Giampaolo, some good players. We have Parma, obviously a former team that used to be really high up in Serie A, and we have Frosinone, who hadn't been in Serie A for a long time but are back in the top division for the second time in just a couple of years. So tell me, which one are you most excited about?
So out of those three teams, I really think that Empoli has the tools to survive. They signed two defenders with Serie A experience in the summer, Luca Antonelli from Milan and Mattia Silvestre from Sampdoria, and they already had Manuel Pasquale, so they have the defense to survive. My other dark horse would be Parma. They signed a lot of players, even with Serie A experience, and they really put Juventus to the test last week.
Okay, Paolo, so I have to ask you, as the master of the mid and lower table, you know, we have an Alex and I work with our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game. They have a lot of intriguing fantasy football games for Serie A. So give us some players, not on the top teams, that people should have on their radar.
The Genoa striker from Poland, Krzysztof Pitek. He already has 3 goals for Genoa. Nicolò Barella, he looks like to be a fixture in Calgary's starting lineup. And also Antonino Lagumina from Empoli. He had a breakout season with Palermo last season. And I think he should do well for Empoli.
Okay, Paolo. So now I have a surprise for you. You've been very disciplined. We have an agreement on Di Marzio's team that we're not going to tweet too much negative stuff. We're not going to be, you know, make some people look bad because of our working relationship. And you've been really, really disciplined, but we have a group chat where you unleash sometimes. So I'm going to copy my good friend Ben Golliver at Sports Illustrated. He has a podcast where he lets his co-host just rant on a topic. And now I'm going to let you rant on the Khedira extension with Juventus and Allegri in general. So the floor is yours. Unlike on Twitter, you're allowed to go as crazy as you want.
I mean, I understand why they signed him. But the thing is that they have other midfielders that they can find, they can groom. You don't need midfielders over 30. They allowed Marchisio to go, and he was a club legend, just to extend Khedira's contract. It doesn't make sense, and the fans, I don't think, will respond in the greatest of light.
Anything else on Allegri that you want to get off your chest? I know he's not your favorite subject, and this is a safe place. Don't worry. This isn't Twitter. This is just a podcast. Anything about Allegri that's been really bothering you that you haven't been able to click send on Twitter?
The two-man midfield, you should have realized at the start of the season that it wasn't going to work. Last season, they struggled with the two-man midfield, and then they started with the two-man midfield against Kiev in the first game. And then it took them an extra half after they conceded 2 goals against Kiev to change to the three-man midfield. And I don't think we've seen the two-man midfield since.
So, Paolo, it was great to have you on. Thank you so much for being our mid-table expert. Everyone follow Paolo. You can follow him at IlCano22. You can read him on Di Marzio's site. I love reading his original articles, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure.
So I lied. We're not closing on Paolo Mangone's segment. We have an ace up our sleeve. Every week I'm amazed at how, not amazed because Alex is amazing, does great work, how much his videos on Twitter resonate. He's becoming a huge superstar on Chelsea Twitter. But Alex also become a Serie A expert as well. So we want to give him his own segment. So we're going to close this week with Alex ranting on a topic of his choosing.
All right, David, thanks so much. And in this segment, I'm always going to have a try and tie back to Serie A. It may not be a current manager or player I'm talking about from Serie A, but that player or manager will have ties to Serie A. And this week, that is no different. I want to talk really quickly about Alvaro Morata. Recently, Alvaro Morata has had a lot of quotes out in the press, but the one quote I had a problem with is him saying that last year's manager did not suit his style. Well, of course, Conte did not suit your style. You're a striker, you want to be on the ball a lot, and Conte played a very conservative approach. I get it. And Morata didn't blame Conte for the fact that he had a poor season. He first talked about his confidence being shot, which is definitely the major issue, and in my opinion, the only issue. Because if you want to talk about Antonio Conte's system not fitting your style, but the only reason why Chelsea fans had a problem with you last year in the first place was that you missed one-on-ones one-on-ones. You missed easy, easy opportunities. That was not Antonio Conte's fault. And yes, I was the first person to be loud about Antonio Conte not being the right guy for Chelsea last year. But how dare Alvaro Morata say that the style of Conte did not suit him when he could have probably scored 15, 20 goals if he had just made some easy one-on-ones. So although I get what he's saying, first and foremost, his confidence was the main issue for him, and that's why he didn't have a great season. Why even utter that last year's manager, his style did not fit you? You could have had a much better season all on your own. You know what the problem is, Alvaro Morata. You know why you don't necessarily succeed sometimes. It's because you're too in your own head. And to bring this really back to Serie A right now is, it's a striker like Alvaro Morata who I just don't love. First of all, I like Morata off the pitch, so I just mean on the pitch. I don't love what Alvaro Morata is all about. He's a striker that even when he's going well, he's kind of more about feeling it. And if he's scoring goals, he's playing pretty smooth and he's definitely in a zone, kind of like a basketball player. Just when they shoot, they can't miss. But Morata doesn't really get down and dirty for goals. I don't need a striker to be a Diego Costa where they're just an animal on a leash or like a Luis Suarez. But I want the striker to have a little bit more hunger, a little bit more tenacity. And Alvaro Morata just doesn't have that even when he's going well. And I'm bringing it back to current Serie A because give me a Mario Mandzukic, honestly, at this point, any day of the week over an Alvaro Morata. David, I'm not just saying it because you're a huge Mandzukic fan, but Mandzukic may not put up the statistics that other top strikers do, and he certainly doesn't, but he gives the team something even when he's not scoring. And when Alvaro Morata's not scoring, he gives the team next to nothing. So Morata's really got to change his attitude overall, but the first thing he has to do is start scoring and honestly, stop talking.